Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee workgroup for the annual report. We have our small but mighty crew, Carolyn Peterson, Erin Meary, Christina Caraballo, and Brett Oliver. At this point, I'll turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Things just continue to get more complicated and complex with all of our regularly scheduled work and COVID and the social change we see around us. And I am so glad you were able to come, and I send best wishes for your continued good health and safety.
Yes, I echo that, Carolyn. Hello to everybody listening, and I'm grateful you guys are here and in good health, and thank you for listening in. We are trucking forward with this committee and all the great progress we've done in health IT. You know, I will say on a sort of a personal note, it's been really something to watch, you know, being part of the previous policy committee, now part of the HITECH, and then this work group, you know, how much work has gone on over the past several years to increase, you know, interoperability, you know, get better on privacy and security, and really get health IT going. And I think a lot of that played out during the COVID, recent COVID crisis. And so this is great work, and this committee's work played out in front of the whole world. And, you know, patients were able to be seen and timely and rapidly and whatever else, and countless lives saved because of the work that we all do, including what this committee does by bringing these topics forward. So this is really good stuff, and I think everybody is appreciative, and I'm appreciative and humbled and honored to be part of this group. So onward we go.
So here's our agenda. It probably looks pretty familiar. We will review our meeting schedules again, go through some more of the topics, potential topics on the list for the annual report for fiscal year 20. We'll have a public comment period, and then we'll briefly review our next steps and adjourn. Could we have the next slide, please? So here's our work group schedule. We are done with May 20. Today is June 4. So on July 22, we will get to see a chart like this with two gray boxes. Next, please. And there will be a review of our progress at the HITECH meeting on June 17, and then we will report back to them in September, October, and November with our goal of going through the draft with the full HITECH in January 2021 and getting approval and transmission in February 2021. Next, please. So we'll go back to our list that we started on a couple weeks ago. And Erin was able to come today, so we're going to start with some of the topics that he had presented and then work through the rest of the list.
Perfect.
The topics he submitted.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. All right, so yeah, we're going to start then with on the first white box there called Impact of Information Blocking on Stark and a Kickback EHR Safe Harbor and sort of that definition of inducement. Sort of a description there was all about, you know, within the ONC Cures Act rule on information blocking, you know, should the HITECH should review the impact of these changes, proposed changes to Stark and anti-kickback regulation. Already some work had been done on this, as you all know, and I saw some great guidance about, you know, if a large health system provides cyber assistance to a small health system, that's not considered inducement, that's or rather, you know, inciting referrals, patient referrals to you. It was good, you know, good cyber hygiene and whatnot. But I think given that there is now going to be free flowing of information between various healthcare delivery organizations, you know, does further clarity need to be given, kind of like that first pass was done already by CMS and by others? Is this important that we look at? That's a question for this group. Brett, what do you think?
I think it's important to keep our eye on that. There's still so many moving parts and definitions that I need to personally understand that I don't know that I can be fully coherent with a reply.
So basically, the whole crux of the matter, the issue was, and still is to some degree, that if you provide services of any sorts from one, you know, provider, group, whatnot, to another, does that qualify as you saying, hey, I did this for you, now send me referrals my way, right? They want to make sure that patients have full choice to go wherever they want to go for their own care. And so to the degree of it, the question came up, you know, obviously there are those independent clinics in the community that don't have the ability to protect themselves from cybersecurity threats, whatever else. And so if I gave assistance, you know, be it like I'm monitoring your email traffic for you or helping you or whatever, does that qualify, right? And so there was some great guidance that was put out several months ago. It was before COVID, so all that's a blur to me. But sometime right before COVID about, no, that doesn't qualify as against the whole Stark rules and whatnot. So the question mark, does all the work that we've been doing and now the finalization of all the rules call into account more clarity need to be given of what, you know, so people know where the boundaries are for Stark and kickback and whatnot?
Yeah, I agree, because I think there's another level of complexity to when you're defining. I mean, I was thinking about in our own health system, we don't have any Epic Community Connect clients right now, but it's certainly something that gets revisited every so often. Well, with the final rule, if we are deemed a software developer, which we never thought we would, but that's, I think if we extend an instance of our EHR, we're declared a software developer, well, that clouds the whole information blocking rules for us as a healthcare organization, or at least some of the potential fines are a whole lot different as a quote software developer than as a healthcare organization. One side tangent to that whole piece that you just uh-huh. said, Aaron, that, uh-huh. yeah. So I guess the point is, yeah, we should continue to keep an eye on it, because I think there's some complexities coming out that will need some definition, at least as our organization, we're trying to figure this out as, we may not go down the road of offering up some of those things because of those definitions.
Considering yeah. the discussion around CDS and FDA is looking at regulating/managing how CDS, and particularly the type that teaches itself things in ways that humans don't necessarily observe or understand. It's, you know, a lot of people who don't think they're going to be in the software business could wind up being in the software business, just using their own internal data sets with no intention of selling anything. So it sounds like a good thing to keep our eye on, even if we don't address it in the report this year.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And based on this discussion, I think it would be really helpful if HITECH could potentially recommend that we do some guidance and recommendations to support and educate providers on this gray area, because the last thing we want is providers that would otherwise help others in the community with the technology and tools that they have to stop just because of fear. So some just guidance on that I think would be really helpful. And highlighting also to ONC areas where providers might want to help, but otherwise not because of just fears, I think would be really a good use of our time.
That's a great point, Christina. So are we as a group saying that we want to watch this topic as the kind of mark, because the environment in COVID really messed up everything in terms of like the keeping our eye on the ball and focus as a healthcare system, right? And so is this something that we want to kind of watch for the remainder of this year as COVID eventually hopefully is resolved and people are back to healthy again and we're back to some level of normal? Or is this something that we should address in this year's report?
I think we're going to have to address it because of, if nothing else, the financial implications for organizations. I mean, I suppose we can watch and see what happens, and if healthcare organizations actually get fined $1 million per incident. But I don't know, Aaron. I totally get your point. Like, there's so much that's up in the air and atypical right now. I don't know. I don't feel strongly either way, but I feel like it would be helpful, kind of back what Christina was saying, if we could alleviate some fears or accentuate them, whatever it may be, but bring some clarity to organizations that And Carolyn, your point was great in terms of you don't even realize you're doing it. I would realize I was giving that software to somebody else. I didn't know that defined me as a developer because we weren't changing anything. But if you look at the details and even some of the specific responses to comment in the text of the final rule, it appears that we would be defined as a software developer. I don't know about that internal, if you have your own internal AI that's changing things, is that defined that way or not? But I don't know. What do y'all think? It feels like we shouldn't wait on that, but I don't know.
I'm wondering if, as co-chairs, you guys can ask if ONC could do an evaluation. Maybe Elisa's team could look at the roles and identify areas where health IT is going to be impacted, and then HITACH could come up with some recommendations and guidance to address some of the issues that we're going to see. My fear is, like, we're going to have the whole, you know, we don't share. It's like deja vu. HIPAA made it so that we didn't want to share patient records or electronic access to records with patients because of fear, and I don't want that to happen again. So this isn't a topic that I followed closely, but I feel like it's one that we need to get in front of and understand.
Okay. Carolyn, what do you think? I think that's a fair question we can ask.
I agree.
All right. That's a great point, Christina, because, I mean, I do want to give credit that you know, I know that ONC, HHS in general, across all of its divisions have been looking at this, and like I said, they did put out some guidance right before the COVID storm hit. So they were looking at this and doing some great work trying to clarify, probably to all of our points, to make sure that people don't try to hide behind any misnomers, which, again, impacted us during COVID, right? I can't tell you how many times I heard from health systems that thought they couldn't share public health data because of HIPAA. And I'm like, no, you know, telling me how many tests, positive tests you have does not qualify as HIPAA. Like, come on. So anyways, I see all of your points. All right, we'll go that route. All right, next item on here is, pull up my screen again. I just minimized it for whatever reason. All right, so organ transplant and health IT. Is that correct, Carolyn? Yeah, because it's gray.
Yep.
The next one.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I think you,
yep.
Sorry, let me clarify something, Ms. Michelle. There is a light gray that Word naturally applied to the table to differentiate the rows, and then, sorry, it was my fault for putting dark gray as an option for a row that the group decided not to pursue further. So there's different colors of gray. If it's light gray, we haven't talked about it yet. I'm sorry.
Got it. That's what I needed. Thank you, Michelle.
Yes. No. Sorry.
It's okay. All right. Information exchange for research. And I want to say that we heard from several of the HITACH members during one of our COVID calls about this issue, right, and how to hyper-accelerate research. In that case, it was around COVID, and I want to say it was Clem and others that were talking through this. And so to the degree of it, this continues to be, in the research domain, an issue of what specific data can't be shared, what kind of consent do you actually need for human subjects, and what kind of consent qualifies. And I've seen a ton of debate between IRBs, between academics, between professionals, patients, asking questions, clarity, and it all came up again with COVID about what that is. So the question is, how do we get to some common rubric standard of what is needed? Maybe it could be, again, clarity on this is what the minimum criteria is for successful consent, informed consent for research, and therefore thus, it also some parameters around what type of data should be shared, can be shared, will be shared, and how it can be shared, right? And so that you then also remain cognizant of things like the California Consumer Protection Act or GDPR or others that tend to come around more often in research than you do in just normal patient care activities. So this is around that, is trying to figure out, can we begin to standardize those data elements? Like I said, I believe we began to have this discussion already at the HITACH because of COVID. What are you all's thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
Okay. Carolyn, Brett?
I agree as well.
All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. So should we present this one as an item to ask for folks to weigh in on during the high-tech meeting? Maybe we won't take the obviously time during the meeting, but say they could synthesize their thoughts and send it back to us so we can begin to look into?
I think that's a good plan. I don't expect that we'll have a lot of time for our presentation in June, and we don't want to get into deep discussions about anything. I think we can kind of give them a list of things to send us comments on as we refine the list and look at the landscape. Yeah.
Yep. Perfect. Good. Yeah. All right. Next on here, organ transplants and health IT. And so because of the executive order on advancing American kidney health, a transplant organ use case for USCDI data exchange quality measures to align incentives and improve efficiency. Basically, what this boils down to is the need for all the various data exchanges and registries that you need for transplant. Really, it goes down to what are we supposed to be measuring, when are we measuring it, and how are we exchanging data? This goes back to data standards. It goes back to systems that are used in communicating across those various registries and simplifying the ability for folks to get on a national registry, qualify to be on the registry, and then obviously get an organ donated and for donors, so donor and recipient, both sides of it. It is a very convoluted process. I put it on the list because it's something that sometimes is overlooked unless you're setting up a transplant program or you run a transplant program like we do. But there's a lot of opportunity here to really streamline and simplify this versus where it is today. And today it's very robust for obvious reasons, for safety reasons, but there could be opportunity here. And I'd be curious your thoughts. Maybe Brett, start with you from a provider perspective.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, to your knowledge, is there a clinical standard data set? Because I don't want to start down the road of here's what we need to do technically speaking if it's not been defined. It just feels like it could be, well, University of Cincinnati wants this and UT Austin wants this. And has there been a general consensus on the data that's needed?
There is for quality purposes, but it's interesting how many different registries and reports and whatnot you have to provide to have a successful transplant program. Again, UNOS application and transplant application, it's all standardized in terms of how do you get on the list and how do you become a donor and how do you become a recipient and all those kinds of things, but it's arduous as all get out. And there's a lot of opportunity for error, although you have usually small armies looking over things and triple-checking things for high-quality programs. But it's an opportunity, right? Does it meet the criteria, though, of being more important than something else? I think that's for us to talk about.
I would say that it's a good thing to look at just because there has been some discussion about changing the protocols for putting people on the list in terms of who gets kidney organs and how they prioritize people and how organs are allocated and whatnot. I think that's still in flux to some degree, and potentially that could affect the kinds of data elements that you need or some of the technical stuff in terms of how they're integrated into the EHR based on what you need to extract and send to the national coordinating groups. So I would say it's probably good to keep it on the radar, even though it's not going to seem like something that is really mainstream in our usual thinking about what's mainstream. It could have a significant impact because the need for organs is only going up. It's not going down.
Yeah.
So Carolyn, you think the data exchange that's necessary is going to go well beyond just simply expanding USCDI elements?
I think transplant is different from other types of practice, and I think there is a potential for that to happen. I mean, I haven't sat down and looked at a chart and compared what they take with what is already suggested to be in the USCDI. But I know in some places, for example, they have very specific protocols about people moving to the town where they will have where they're listed for a transplant. So you've got multiple addresses, for example, multiple phone numbers, because it's not just your home phone, it's the phone of the transplant lodge or hotel or wherever you're staying. and potentially all sorts of other kinds of data that you normally don't think about collecting, you know, like if you just need to go into the hospital for some sort of surgery, even when you're traveling.
Gotcha.
And then there is data about tracking outcomes, because the programs have to report, I think it's 30-day, 1-year, and 3-year survival and other metrics of it. So it's not just the individual, it's being able to pull and analyze all kinds of data from different people's charts. And
Yep. Potentially
you would also be checking donors as well at some point, although they don't do that a lot right now, I don't think.
Yeah, so it's just a huge gap, I don't want to say gap, huge opportunity area that really could be, to Carolyn's point, really looked at and really talked through, right? So are we recommending that we bring this topic forward for solicitation of input from the team, from the high tech?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
The only thing I struggle with, I agree with bringing it forward for further discussion. The only thing I struggle with is it's sort of like IT driving the train, whereas I really feel like it's more of an operational issue, so that the kidney transplant folks all agree across the country, or at least whatever governing body there is, to say this is the data that we need to exchange, and lung transplant and cardiac transplant, et cetera. What I want to avoid, because we try to do that in our own organization, is to say IT comes and says, here's what you're going to do. Like, you know, we tend to be more of a support function. I think y'all would agree with that. And so That's my only hesitation with, I don't feel like there's an overriding, and maybe there is, and I'm just not aware of it, but an overriding operational organized fashion to say, here's what we need, make it happen, IT. Does that make sense?
It does. I was just thinking if the whole transplant listing system gets reoriented and changed and they put in new metrics, it may be that organizations are in the position of going back to their IT and saying, okay, we need this. This is what you have to
do.
Yeah. But
maybe there needs to be a federal oversight saying, this is the data you're going to use, and I know you want, you know, their third address, but we're going to give you two and just, you know, move it forward, or it just bogs down into never moving forward.
Yeah, it's just interesting, you know, and I've learned so much about South and Central Texas over the past 2 years here. I've been at UT Austin, just really blessed to be in this part of the country. And it's amazing the high amount of transplants that occur, particularly as you go south more towards the border, and the amount of data disparity that occurs, especially as you begin to get out more rural parts of Texas, you know, south of San Antonio. It's just very interesting, and how disparate some of those data systems are, and what you're collecting and how you're collecting it. And there's need, there's community need, and desperate community need. And so you start looking at it, it's like, wow, you know, this is something that really has an opportunity to be a high impact, high value exercise. And so that's how this even ginned up for me in my mind, because it's like, boy, I can just see it play out in front of me, just how much of a need there is here.
Makes sense.
All right, next item then, trucking along, info blocking. And Brett, I think this is yours.
Yeah, gosh, it's been a long time. Where you see that, especially in the PDMP market, that's where I had seen potential information blocking, where you've got some private companies that have either legislation at a state level or arrangements with different information exchange, whether they're state or you know, private, and it makes it more difficult to obtain that data. Now, in my particular example of the PDMP, it's gotten a little bit better since I solicited that comment because of RxCheck and Department of Justice standing that up as a hub, and that's put a little bit more pressure on states. But I couldn't get I couldn't get Indiana to even talk with me about connecting to the hub we already had, because they had legislation with APRIS that essentially the state would fund APRIS to connect with anyone in Indiana. The problem is that right over the river in Kentucky, they're not funding us. But we're stuck with that business relationship, and just some kind of appeared a bit shady practices that had me thinking about that with information blocking and barriers. So I'm not sure if there are other examples of that y'all want to talk about, or I didn't know if we could do a more global understanding of business practices that were out there analogous to, you know, the PDMP market.
Yeah, PDMP continues to be one of those states things that either do it or don't do it, right? And then the organizations within that state either do it on their own or don't. And it's just, it's very interesting. I have seen a lot of chatter on the various news outlets and whatever else about PDMP access or lack of access that sort of even inhibited the COVID response and trying to get access to over-the-counter prescriptions and whatever else. And the belief that PDMP access or not having access to PDMP either sped up or slowed that down, right? So I think there's opportunity here. I don't have a sense of how bad or how egregious the situation is, but I think you're right. I do think there is a lot of information blocking. And there was that recent very public lawsuit between SureScripts and somebody about this, right? So.
Yeah, maybe we could keep it on the radar. I don't know that we need the committee to address it unless there were had more detail to add to our examples.
I don't know, Carolyn, Christina, what do you think?
I think it's an issue of concern, but I'm not sure how far up it really will float this year, given all the other things.
Mm-hmm.
It may be something. Maybe we need an additional list, like we have the parking lot, we have what's in the report, and then we have the under observation list, which is sort of like keeping an eye on it, but not acting right this minute.
I like that.
Yep, I like that too.
Yeah, because it is important. I don't have a sense of like how we know there's a problem. I just don't know how much on fire it is. All right.
Well, and it makes sense to see what the actual, now that the final rule is written, what impact that's going to have. So maybe, we'll have a better position to take with this, next year.
Yeah, you're right. I would just be happy if folks get the ADT notification component right of the final rule, much less this. So let's start small, people.
Hey, guys.
All right.
Huh? Before we move on, can we move back up to TEFCA and patient access?
Sure.
I know it's red, and if we want to move on, that's fine. I'm not sure, Michelle, what you said the red meant. But I don't know how much more discussion this needs. This came up at it was the very last item on our last call with like negative minutes left. So basically what I'm thinking here is like it's an essential thing that we've identified as a task force and ONC's identified and the whole industry's identified is that patients' ability to access, aggregate, and interact with their data should be flexible and enable consumers to choose and manage their health and their family's health. And I think that's a really simple way of looking at this, but it doesn't exist now. So when I think about patient access and TEFCA, I think our recommendation here could be for the HITECH or potentially a spinoff of the TEFCA work group to look at patient access and where it fits within the TEFCA. I've been an advocate for the concept of a consumer QHIN, and maybe we're not ready for that, but I do want to start laying a foundation to meet the goal that a patient consumer can come in and access their information from everywhere really easily and not have to go into multiple portals, multiple places, and not have their selection of applications that they can engage with tied to certain organizations. And I know that's a lot of work, and I understand that that's not where we are today, but unless we start talking about it and building a framework within the framework that we have now to have a roadmap to get there, we're just not going to. So even if it doesn't happen tomorrow, I would like us to put recommendations together on how we can start taking baby steps to get there and hopefully get there more quickly.
I think that's a fabulous point, Christina. And I would add a component that, we had to look at very closely because we did a tremendous amount of contact tracing and home monitoring on behalf of City of Austin, or Austin Public Health, rather. And so we put out a number of apps to do home monitoring as well as to assist with contact tracing and whatever else. And it's amazing when you look at the different disparities of patients and consumers out there and what their ability is to access. We had people that were of low socioeconomic status that actually had a smartphone but didn't have access to the Google Store or Apple Store because they just didn't have the ability to do so. And so it was very interesting that you would think, oh, just download an app on your phone. No, they didn't know how to do that, right? Or they were afraid to or whatever else. So there was these inequalities. So health equity became an issue, and how to level that playing field to make sure that data is consumable for all, in all. And in my case, 60% of my patients speak Spanish only or read Spanish only. So making sure that stuff was available in Spanish and English, I mean, all of that, right? All of that in whatever digestible format, and that it didn't require them to jump through a bunch of hoops. So I completely commend and agree with your comments. I saw it play out firsthand, and it's important.
That's an excellent point, Aaron.
Brett, Christina, any objections? I think it's a fair one to recommend forward.
No,
yeah, I really want to add the health equity as well. So I think that's a really, really important point that you bring up in this.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. Michelle, was that clear what we're doing with that one?
Yeah, I think we awesome. Also change it to blue and add some more text.
Sweet. All right. Okie doke. Safety of mobile health applications. Mr. Brett.
Yeah, maybe this is an information gathering. I have concern that what's the process for someone to put, place an app on, whether it's Apple or wherever, that's not prescribed by, a healthcare provider or clinician? Is there some kind of safety net? Or maybe not even safety as much as effectiveness grid or filter that these things are taken through, they're going to explode as we provide more data to patients, as they're accessing the discrete data from their health records all over the place, and now people are going to want to monetize that on an individual patient level. Is there someone that's looking out for the patient to say, yeah, this app has validity when it says it can help you with your blank? There are studies behind it, or it's safe. I mean, there's some things that may not be effective, but they're not going to be dangerous. There are other things that if they're telling them how to manage their insulin could be really dangerous. Who's monitoring that if it's coming from sort of a patient-centric, they're initiating that response? It's one thing if you're in my office and I say, hey, use this app to help you with your blood sugars. I've vetted it, or we've vetted it as an organization. Is there anybody that's out there looking at the safety and effectiveness of these mobile health applications? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It does.
So maybe?
Yes.
It's probably more of just an understanding. Maybe there is something out there. Maybe you can't post on that, or you can't present it to Apple or Google and say, here, put this on there, and they don't check it out at all. As long as you can pay the bill, they don't care. I mean, I don't know how the system works.
I like it, Brett. I think it's important. I'm wondering, is that also part of patient access and health equity? Is there a component of safety with that? Maybe that's a question for Christina as well. I don't want to convolute the topics. I think you brought up a great point, Christina. But I mean, I'm wondering, is this a sub element of that?
Well, it certainly happens because of patient access. Traditionally, you wouldn't be able to. Well, I guess
right.
You could, but some of the information, it expands it, I suppose, I should say. Now you're able to throw your blood sugars that maybe your A1C that you didn't have access to now can get funneled into an app or your microalbumin, whatever the lab test may be.
Mm-hmm.
No, I 100% agree with that, because when you're looking at the patient access and the QHINs and where they live, I think that mobile health safety is going to be an important piece of that evaluation. So I would put it as almost a line item under the patient access in TEFCA.
Mm-hmm. And health equity. Yeah. Got it. Christina, are you good? I mean, Carolyn, are you good with that?
Yep.
Okay. Michelle, is that clear?
Yes. And also, awesome. We'll want to circle back to last year's report and make sure there's alignment there because it was mentioned last year, but as sort of a line in passing rather than a separate section.
Okay. Good. All right. Third-party access to health data. Now, this is a fun one that I tend to get passionate about. Okay. So there is a whole lot of I think we saw this highlighted with some of the comments that came back before the final rule, concern about privacy, patient privacy, and are they able to control access to their data? And there's been a whole lot of work done from the days of Blue Button 1.0 and 2.0 and informed consent and phenomenal work by the ONC and the OCR and every group out there to try to get more definition around, you know, how can you access what data? And even in our 2016, I believe it was 2016, API FACA under the old Policy and Standards Committee, Lucia Savage at the time did a phenomenal job working with her team to lay out exactly who was responsible for what under HIPAA and third-party access to data and whatever else. All that being said and done, I still feel like there is a tremendous misunderstanding in the industry between developers, patients, and health systems who can access what data, when, and how. It kind of ties back into my earlier comments about research and consent and everything else. It is amazing to me, and I think, again, COVID just highlighted it, what the liquidity is for healthcare data, for a patient's data, and what people believe they can or cannot do with data once they receive consent. And I always personally err on the side of being very conservative and just ask a million times consent. And case in point, when we were doing contact tracing, we must ask consent at least 10 different times for 10 different things. Can we, Aaron, ask your hair salon if you were there before we call the hair salon? Can we, you know, ask this before we do? I mean, we made sure we received informed consent every time and spelled it out very clearly. And that's just for contact tracing, right, for a public health emergency. I don't think many organizations go through that diligence, either provider, developer, whatever. And to me, my concern is, even though as wonderful it is with TEFCA and having information shared, that it's just going to be magnified. So my question is there a role here to play to look at and really clean up and double down on what are the responsibilities of third-party developers? And I think some has been done recently, but I just wanted to ask the question.
Yeah, I think this is a great topic. Is this another one that can be bundled under our TEFCA and patient access?
I think so. It could be. It's definitely part of that safety component.
There's definitely
Carolyn, what do you
privacy
think?
Aspect to it as well, though, Aaron.
Say what now?
I was going to say there's definitely a privacy aspect to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think that there's in the evaluation that we do on how patients are going to access information via TEFCA, privacy and security is going to be a huge piece of that and how third-party apps connect in order for patients to interact with the data in a more user-friendly fashion is going to be a big part of that. So as we kind of build this ecosystem, a lot of these concerns have overlap, but they're all these consumer-facing technologies, right? So I think pulling out like a bundle of things we've identified and putting this in a larger evaluation of how consumers are able to, how we enable consumers to interact via TEFCA is the overarching goal that I see, but open to others' thoughts. And that includes other players coming into the health ecosystem, like the Google.
I recall one of our high-tech conversations where there was a very large vendor that stated that, you know, if information flowed over a QHIN that they didn't have before, could they monetize that data in a de-identified manner? And it really sort of startled me, saying, wait a minute, you got access to data because you were part of a QHIN. That doesn't mean you can go then take it, ingest it, download it, sell it. I mean, I don't think that's what's allowed. So, you know, it's interesting to see the rules of the road. All I'm asking for is, do we need speed limits on the highways, right? And I think it definitely plays into patient access on TEFCA. I think that's a fair, to me, it's a fair sub-bullet.
I also think it ties into the research in patients' ability to share their data with research easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we'll combine this one also under that bullet. It's gonna become a big, that's gonna become a big bullet then, Christina. That's good. It's important. Okay. Vaccine tracking. Are we ready to go there? Let's do that one. Brett, that's you and Christina.
I cannot remember what we were talking about there, Christina.
Let's see. Let me read it.
Did this have to do perhaps with some of the stuff that was covered in the pediatric requirements?
Yeah.
In particular, because with COVID, so many kids are missing vaccinations because their parents don't want to take them into a healthcare facility.
Yeah, and we've also talked about just access to immunization information.
Yep.
As well.
Yeah, and I remember part of that was, too, if we could preemptively understand, hey, Southern Utah's, their, you know, MMR rate is just plummeted for some reason. Now, obviously, COVID's easy to understand, but we don't know why. At least if it plunges below what's necessarily for herd immunity, you know, you can really put focus on things if you understand it at least at a national or state level. It's so, at least in our state, it's so fragmented still. It's tough to get a full picture of the patient, at least electronically.
Okay. So, So from my perspective, I think this is an issue. It has come up. It's actually coming up now as we plan to resume classes here at UT Austin. I don't think this is going to go away as an issue. I think this is just going to get worse. That's my personal take.
Well, and you don't really know how bad it is at this point because people can so easily falsify stuff.
True. Or you have states that mandated, as we saw the pediatric task force, mandate paper, right, a checkbox.
Yep.
Mandate a signature. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a state law. So what are you going to do with that? Okay. Yeah, this is exactly what that was. All right. So with that one, are we recommending to bring that one forward then, back to the table for further topics, further consideration by the HITECH?
I think we should.
Okay.
I agree.
All right. All right. Next topic there. You scroll down a little bit, please. All right. Health IT response to COVID-19. Oh, great. All right. These fun ones.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Facilitate adoption, update of standardized codes, data terminology, document COVID-19. Yes, yes. Okay. So basically a couple things here. This goes back to electronic case reporting. Which is something that not just Arian, but also Stephen Lane and I have been talking tremendously about ECR and trying to push this faster and trying to get it here to Austin, as well as utilization of the correct ICD-10 codes for COVID-19 and standardization. I can tell you that this is a major bugaboo for public health, and I think there was even a New York Times article documenting the difficulty the CDC had, as well as public health, because of this. And even granular data such as race and ethnicity that wasn't mandated to be gathered. So there was a lot of discrepancies in trying to figure out where health inequality inequity was occurring, to try to get help to those communities. So there was a lot of issues here that played out. My question is this something that is part of either the USCDI task force or some of those standards task forces to be a subgroup underneath that, those major bodies that already exist, or should this be its own topic to talk about?
So I know AI has been leading some work, and I've been working closely with my colleague, Keith Boone, who's been leading an initiative within HL7, and it's the SANR project, which stands for Situation Awareness for Novel Epic Response. And they're basically, it's been amazing to watch. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with the project, but it's they've basically gotten an implementation guide to address COVID and future pandemics up and running in a very short amount of time. They recently tested at the HL7 Connectathon and kind of have gotten on an informal acceleration track and have been able to convene a ton of the top industry thought leaders and tech groups. It's been amazing to see a lot of the EHR vendors come together and others to just solve a problem that needed to be solved really quickly by the health IT industry. So that's been happening over the last 2 months, and they're looking to hopefully ballot the new implementation guide in September, and this is through HL7. So that's happening now. I do think a next step is going to be how do we get this ready for national deployment, so figuring out a fast track through the USCDI will be really beneficial. I don't know if that's under HITECH. I'll go back to the whole process that has been put in place for data elements to be submitted to ONC through the data element submission process within the USCDI and to be reviewed based on readiness and all the criteria we put together and submitted as a committee last year. So I'm not sure what the ask of HITECH is. I think there are already natural procedures in place where should this go into USCDI and be up, kind of teed up that we're going to evaluate it anyway in our review cycle. So I'm not sure what the ask is on data standards and what we could do based upon what I know that's happening now. But definitely a topic that I think is interesting. And I do think that as I'm thinking out loud or thinking in real time, we are going to need to put like ecosystems in place to enable this data to be shared on a broader scale. So once we have the standards to share the data, that's one thing, but then being able to share it across our different systems that may or may not talk could be a recommendation for HITECH to look at. That's kind of like the interoperability plumbing.
Yep. So we want to put this maybe on the one to watch for right now, that list that we talked about earlier, while the natural synergies play out. Because, I mean, if there's really work going on around this, I mean, there's no reason to do dual work, especially if it's already going to go in front of the standards for consideration in the appropriate manner.
Yeah, maybe watch and see what support is needed next.
Okay.
But I do know that it's like we've obviously seen this as a high priority, so I hesitate for us to just make a decision too quickly on that. Isn't ONC coming up with some tasks for the HITECH to help with COVID/future pandemics? I think we were waiting for that. So I'm curious what they're putting together for us. Is it, Lauren, is that correct? That was the takeaway I got after our full day meeting.
Yeah, it's still TBD at this point. Work in progress, but understandably just, you know, taking a while, mostly needing to connect with CDC. But yeah, I would say just stay tuned, and hopefully we'll be able to announce something at the high-tech meeting this month or sometime thereafter.
Okay. Maybe we'll just, and then we just hang on that one. All right. I know we're getting close to time here. Maybe we can quickly go to the last.
I think we probably have to go to public comment.
Yeah, you're right. Public comment time. Okay. Almost there. All right.
We have another meeting to do the next one.
That's right. Okay.
At this point, we'll ask the operator to open the public line.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And any comments in the queue?
There are no public comments at this time.
Okay. Carolyn and Erin or Michelle, anything else before we adjourn?
Just thank everyone for some good discussions today, and pleasing to see that we're making progress on this and putting ourselves in a good place for the fall when the work starts and the writing work starts.
Yeah, it's such a good topics. And what's interesting to me is a lot of these that we had talked about, again, they reared their head in full flight during COVID, so definitely helped. It helps talking through them because so many times you come back to, oh, yeah, here's an example of this, and here's an example of this. So I like these talks because we all talk about our war stories, and that's important.
I have one question for the group, and I have time to talk to the co-chairs soon ahead of the high-tech full committee meeting. But how does the group feel about presenting topics? Because there are things the group has talked about before and have been brought up by high-tech members. Or do we want to stop with this amount that we've already discussed as far as presenting the list to the high-tech? Ones that we've discussed this month, I'll say, or through this month.
When's our next meeting? Do we have one before the high-tech meeting?
No, not until July 22nd. So I'm getting a little worried about time to cover everything. I want to point out some of the next section was going to be just things that we already went in depth in last year's report and can follow through on with updates for this year. So I didn't think that would take a lot of time anyway for the work group to discuss. It was more the next few items that were pages 5 and 6 in this document. There were a couple that were related to COVID-19 and then one that's more of a process issue that we can get to in a different forum. And then there were two that were kind of emerging issues type concerns. So we have options of offline like or semi-online through email, following up on those few things, or carving out time in July to come back to a couple of them.
I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I don't know, Carolyn, if you do.
No, not really.
So Michelle, I think we'll just move forward to what we have, and we'll just keep talking through it.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Okay.
Cool.
Well, if that's there, then I appreciate everybody and everybody's time today. Great discussion.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great
Thanks.
Day. Night.
You too.
Thanks for
good day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.